How does the Beatles' first appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show, as well as the Rolling Stones' first U.S. performance at the Swing Auditorium in Southern California, relate to the Walkman, the iPod, and music as we know it today? Find out about all this and more on Full Circle Analog, the podcast hosted by Brad Blue, the man who, like many, was there through it all. The first and second British invasion, Bruce Springsteen, Elton John, and so, so many more. As well as sometimes me, Alec Blue, his son and fellow lover of music, who comes on to provide a more modern perspective as well as learn about the past.
As we record this podcast, it happens to be October 25th, exactly 2 months before Christmas. I don't know why I always notice the 25th throughout the year. I used to joke when it was June 25th that Christmas was only 6 months away. It seems like we get towards the end of October, the weather starts changing, daylight savings time kicks in, and all of a sudden it's a marathon. We start thinking about Christmas. What are we going to do? What are our plans for Thanksgiving? Who are we going to get together with? The machinations of family, a lot of it's stressful. A lot of it is unhappy. A lot of it is very joyous. Sometimes this has to be planned months in advance. Do we send Christmas cards? We keep doing that. Do we find a new way? Are we strictly going to be old-fashioned and do it the way we've always done it? I know my wife and I always talk about doing something different for Christmas, and by the time it gets to Thanksgiving, and this year we are going to have less than a month between Thanksgiving and Christmas, as Thanksgiving is on the 28th of November. So that will be 3 weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, anyway, in the business I'm in, I take photos, video, audio from your collection and put it into a box set. We have several clients who feel that their memories that they have are worth saving and have a dilemma. What do we do with all the old audio, video, and photos? It seems like, you know, as we grow up, we get our first camera. This generation has grown up on the digital age, growing up assuming they're going to get a smartphone, taking pictures, social media, everything's integrated into one. I mean, stuff that we used to have to do all separately and manually, which we call analog, and we are Full Circle Analog. We discuss everything old tech, primarily music, a little bit of movies, things that we grew up with that we remember from the 60s and 70s. And back then, you know, right now, a lot of us are in our mid-60s or mid-70s, and we've either encountered this situation, most likely, or we're going to, where we have not only our memories that we've accumulated over the years, but we have our parents as well. And really, I don't think there's ever been a cohesive, consistent end game to what to do with all the pictures over the years. Well, yeah, we put them in photo albums. If we knew the tech, we could combine them and edit them and put them into more convenient technologies. But, you know, back then, when we went from 8mm film, for example, to VHS, and then the videotape got smaller and smaller and smaller, then the digital age came in and we had mini discs. to today, everything is pretty much streaming or captured on a memory card and then put on our computer or put out onto social media. A lot of it's little sound bites, cutesy little pictures. Selfies are so big. Boomer generation, I don't think, is really that into selfies. When you took photographs, you either wanted to take a beautiful picture or you wanted to capture a family moment or capture your children growing up. Right now, I've just digitized all of my 8mm camcorder film of my son from about age 3 to about age 7 or 8. And from that point on, we started to just take photographs. Some of you might identify with when the digital age came in, there was a point where I had a 35mm camera, analog. I had one of the first digital cameras. I wanted it at my office Christmas party. And I had a Sharp 3-inch square camcorder, which actually shot 8mm video film. And the challenge became, what do we take when we are going out? If we're going to see family, what do we take? Do we take the old-fashioned camera? Do we take the new digital camera? Do we take the camcorder? If you were the videographer in the family, one thing you'll notice when you go back through your old memories is you're not in any of the videos. Pretty high price to pay for getting the memories in the first place. The rest of the family is happy or not happy. I think most grown-ups feel uncomfortable seeing themselves in video or hearing themselves. I don't know. But the main point of it back then was to capture our son as he was growing up. And you know, it was short term because we would come home and watch what we had done during the day. And one of the memories I have as well. Well, first of all, I want to talk about a little bit more about this. That was one issue, is what technology to use for any given moment. Besides having to, you know, if your child was very young, besides taking diaper bags and those wonderful bags where you could throw everything in that you needed for any situation, whether they threw up, whether they had needed a diaper change or a change of clothes, if the weather changed, you know, if they lost something, you know, you had toys and pacifiers. You could carry everything in these bags. But on the other shoulder, for Dad, there most likely was the cameras. The old 35mm camera, the digital camera, the new camcorders that came out. Camcorders were great. When we didn't call them camcorders in the beginning. They were just VHS cameras that sat on your shoulder or a heavy-duty tripod because they were big cameras. And then, like everything else, they started to miniaturize, and the price came down. But VHS revolutionized family home movie taking. The downside to growing up as a boomer is, first of all, the cameras back then were expensive. Not everybody had them. I only had one uncle who had a camera, a video camera. That was it. And I don't have any video of me growing up. Lots of photographs. But the problem with 8mm video back then is there was no sound. By the end of that technology, they started to incorporate sound into the video. In the 8 years I've been doing video transfer, I've come across one 8mm project with 2 3-inch reels of 8mm film with sound. All the rest are silent. And it's really strange when you grew up with camcorder video, VHS video. Sound comes with it, of course. And it's really weird to watch video without sound. And I'm sure looking back on it now, looking at your family home movies, it's cool to see, you know, a great grandpa or a grandpa or your dad on video, but to not be able to hear them. I mean, one of the greatest sadnesses or disappointments I have is I know what my grandfather on my dad's side looked like, but I never heard his voice. We got married in 1990, and a wedding present from one of my brother-in-laws was to have our wedding videotaped by a professional videographer. It was a pretty cottage industry back then. He was looking for a videographer to do some work for him, and the first guy or one of the guys that he talked to said he was primarily a wedding videographer, and which my brother-in-law said, well, that's great because my sister is getting married, and I'll hire you to do her wedding. So, of course, they had to get our permission. My wife didn't want to at first. But as it turns out, it was a great, great thing because not only do we have a videotape of our wedding that our son can see, but there's also a videotape of his grandfather's walking and talking. Although he has not seemed very interested, kind of scary, some scary thing related to it. It's weird. But I guess there's just never been an end game about your photos. I mentioned earlier about boomers of my age right now, 65 to 75, who we not only have a whole bunch of movies or pictures or audio recordings of our own, but we have our parents too. I found when I sold my parents' house about 5 years ago, a bunch of photographs that were my dad's personal photographs of him growing up, and I don't know anybody in the pictures. He came out to California from Ohio when he was a baby, and at some point he must have got a camera because there's a bunch of pictures. I have no idea who these people are. Right now, they're, you know, on my side of the family, everybody's dead. There's no one to talk about the past. You know, in the Bible, history was passed down from generation to generation, and in Indian culture and all kinds of culture, through conversation, through stories. The wise men, the elders would pass on the history from one generation to the next, and it was an oral tradition. Well, we do have a lot of that, but the only person still living is my mother-in-law, who is able to remember, and she seems to be pretty accurate about it, the family history. Ironically, I'm interested in nostalgia, and I'm interested in digitizing people's old memories, coming from a family that wasn't interested in it at all. My mom was from a Finnish background, raised on a farm in Minnesota, and absolutely had no interest in telling me about our family history, where we came from, was pretty vague about it. I heard more from other relatives. Her sisters came from a family. I'm an only child, but there was lots of sisters and one brother. My dad had two sisters, so I had lots of aunts and uncles. And, you know, got to hear about the family from them as well. But across the board, none of them really wanted to talk about it that much. You begin to wonder why. So today, we have such a way to go in many respects. But at the same time, it's so much easier with digital technology to capture the past and preserve it. Now, yeah, it does take work, it does take knowledge, and if you're not willing to do that, it does cost some money. In some cases, a lot of money. But I guess you have to weigh is it important to do it? If it is, how important is it? How much should I save? What should I save? And is it really going to mean anything to a generation or so? I mean, every once in a while, a client will bring in a picture that's over 100 years old that got damaged that we repair. And this person was critical in the family moving west or part of the family legacy. And these pictures were taken in the 1850s. We've seen on public television that there's the History Detective show, but there's also that show that traces the ancestry of, they tend to have famous people on, usually news people or actors or actresses, where they go through the various records. You discover quite quickly on that show that, boy, were records well kept back in the, from the foundings of our colonies through the, all the way through the Civil War, slave records, census records, all kinds of fascinating stuff. History detectives, a lot of times it's a physical object that the person wants to know if it's real or if it's a fake. And then on this I forget the guy's name, but he has another show that the show is called Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates Jr. It's on public television. It goes into the celebrity's ancestry. And, one thing I know for sure, that going back and pointing out historical record can eliminate a lot of bad things that happen in our world today. Right now, we're so polarized in 2019, politically and many, many other ways. There's the gift of compromise, the idea of compromise seems to be gone. It's my way or the highway. I mean, how many of you out there have lost friends because you like who's in the White House or you don't, and some of your friends feel the opposite? And that's happened to me. I have some friends I cannot believe are thinking the way they do about politics today, so much so that I think because the person in the White House right now is who he is, we're not used to having someone like that in there. And a lot of us feel that he's a real shady person and therefore can't be trusted. And that bleeds itself into our friendship. I have never in my 60 plus years lived through a time where my friendship somewhat depended upon the political spectrum. So nostalgia. Is nostalgia important? Happened to see an article, the Wall Street Journal magazine, that had several experts chiming in on the subject of nostalgia. And they were writers, they were entertainers, they were professors, actresses, and they looked at nostalgia from, like, remembering a certain smell, like even from a cigarette, reminded them of a relative who they were very fond of. One talking about baseball and how ironic it is that, baseball is even popular at all because in this fast-paced world we live in, baseball, unlike other sports, is selling a connection to the past. I mean, how often have you talked about either, we don't have to narrow it to a ball game, it could be a concert. But when I grew up, I went to a lot of college, UCLA Bruin basketball games in the John Wooden era. I went to Laker games with Jerry West and Elgin Baylor and Wilt Chamberlain era. I saw the All-Star game at the Forum. I've been to Dodger games my whole life. I'm a National League fan. I'm a Dodger fan, not so much an Angel fan. In recent years, the hockey teams. So we have those of us that love sports, we can connect to either, teams we like, but a moment. For example, my claim to fame at being at a baseball game, I happened to be there with my friend Greg and my dad and his friend Don, and we were there when Koufax pitched his perfect game. Most boring game I ever saw, but by the seventh inning, Sandy hadn't given up a walk or a run or a hit, and it only happened once, and we just happened to be there. There's been people, I've known people that were there when Kirk Gibson hit his famous home run in the World Series against Oakland. A lot of us have met that situation. A lot of us have met famous people. That's something we look back on. I have photographs related to that. If you live in Southern California, it's almost inevitable you're going to run into somebody famous if you're in Hollywood or, I mean, anywhere. I mean, they're everywhere, even out here in the Inland Empire. Palm Springs, Palm Desert, you know, La Quinta, there's some very wealthy towns east of us here where I'm broadcasting from. So we have the sports connection. We talked about smell, nostalgia being a smell, nostalgia being remembering something from a sporting event, which in baseball, oftentimes, this author notes, connects you to your father. There's the feeling of loss of some lady who's an artist who's an immigrant. And due to the politics and the violence in the Middle East, realizes at some point that she'll never go home again. She'll never put her foot down where she was born. And there's this emotion of sorrow and unbearable pain, she says, that comes, that really is inexplicable to her. But at the same time, feeling a sadness that you cannot go back there. As a Thomas Wolfe says, you can never go home again. There's a rush of nostalgia that's lovely and beautiful and makes you feel like you're connected to your roots, even if you couldn't go back. There's just something that connects you when you talk about it. And it makes you richer as a person in your experience. You know, I came from there. It's where my roots are. It's where I learned to grow up and that kind of thing. So it's a sadness about not being able to go back, but a joy that it's part of your fabric of who you are. One also says that one thought is nostalgia has to do with deep and profound desires for things that once gave us joy and no longer exist. That's an interesting concept. Something in the past, like a rock concert, because our podcast is a lot about rock concerts and the music scene in Southern California, and especially in the inland part of Southern California. We can look back on concerts all the time and how much joy they gave us. And although as the years go by, I have a hard time remembering details from certain concerts, I mean, that's what we did when we grew up. From the time I was a sophomore in high school on through the 70s, is we went to rock concerts. We saw all those bands. Wasn't old enough to see the Beatles and a lot of those groups for the first British invasion, but starting in the second British invasion and into the 70s, anybody who came to town, we somehow managed. The tickets were affordable. We all were driving. And our parents were pretty cool about letting us go across town to these concerts. So the idea that they don't exist hardly is a thought. But however, I think there's an aspect of, even though these were childhood things almost, or young adult things, they enable something in you that reinforces a sense of wonder and gets you out of yourself. A smell, we have a sports, we have concerts, we have, you know, music, definitely. The concerts, the whether it could be a play, it could be the Philharmonic, it could be, you know, stand-up comedy, you know, whatever your thing was. And for our purposes here, we're pretty much focused on the concerts of the day, the music of the day, you know, how the physical connection of opening up a vinyl record, an album, reading it from cover to cover, smelling it, looking at the sleeve on the inside, the lyrics started to appear at some point and we could follow along and sing, and then live albums came along And that was also a joy that, I remember like yesterday, I quote lyrics from movies and especially lyrics from songs quite often. And it's just part of my normal conversation. It's ingrained and embedded in my psyche. So, you know, is nostalgia a sense of loss? Is nostalgia a sense of joy? I think it's all those things. There's some that say that, you know, going back is wrong because the past is the past and you have a fear of embracing the future or even the present. Or some would say that nostalgia helps you understand. One of the comments was understanding the past helps you in some weird way being able to think about the future. Those that predict, you know, or have to create things for the future, whether it's cars or cities or water for the masses or whatever it could be. Nostalgia is definitely something that, you know, I have clients that, you know, I love talking to people, and I've yet to find the catalyst for what makes some people want to save their memories and other people's would love to, but they don't want to invest the time and or the money to have it done. And today we've seen so many disasters, fire in California, fire, my gosh, we got fires raging right now. People lose everything in a minute, everything. And if you lose that bond to the past in photographs that you have on your wall or, you know, photo albums or, you know, this digital age, the digitizing can be very helpful in preserving those memories because you can digitize them, put them in a safe place that's not in your home, safe deposit box, somebody else's possession, your emergency kit, little flash drives, external hard drives don't take up a whole lot of space, and you can have all your memories there. And if you have to leave the house in a hurry, you can grab that bag and have them in them. And a computer can always be replaced, but those memories can't. That's where the digital age comes in real handy. Digital age comes in handy to preserve the past so that we can understand the future. So we'll take a little break and we'll be back in a minute. So in conclusion, no matter how you feel about nostalgia, whether you think it's okay to look back to remember the good times, almost to the point where the good times back there were better than they have ever been since. Gore Vidal once said that life is over after college, that all your joys happen before you're 22. Or you shouldn't go back to the past. The past is the past. You should always be growing and moving towards the future. Nostalgia definitely helps us gain a perspective on where we've been and where we're going. What was right, what was wrong, what was good, what was bad. Maybe we could have done this, we could have done that, or we should have done this, or should have done that. It gives us a perspective on where to go individually and in discussion with others, whether it's friends or church friends or whatever your group or circle of friends is. Nostalgia, looking back, definitely has a place to help us looking forward. That's where wisdom comes in. I don't know how you can, some seem to have wisdom way ahead of their years. A lot of the rock songs from the 70s were written by 20-year-olds or 20-somethings who seemed to have a lifetime of experience. So nostalgia, looking back, can help us look forward, most definitely. I think it all affects us somewhere, maybe in the middle. I don't know how else to say it. I'm one who's very nostalgic for music and art from a time frame from about 1968 to about 1975. That seems to have been a time of most significance of things that were important in my life. And I draw on them for this podcast. I draw on this for my business to help you listeners out there put together your memories in a cohesive manner that you can enjoy to show whoever it is in your family that's important to you, that you want to pass on a sense of who you are and what you are. I hope you enjoyed this podcast on nostalgia. It's a subject we could talk about many, many episodes. Thanks for listening in, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening to Full Circle Analog, where we connect with the Inland Empire's musical roots. If you really enjoyed this podcast and like to find out when our next episodes go live, we upload every Wednesday. And to get direct links to those episodes, go ahead and follow us at Full Circle Analog on Facebook. You can find us at fb.me/FCAnalog to get there quickly, or you can find us at odnws.com/podcast. It's our official website, and that page has a link to our podcast on basically any platform you can find it on, as well as players for our most popular platforms. Thanks for listening, and check us out next week on Full Circle Analog.